From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 10th day of September, 2021. It's USDA Report Day. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the reports and go through the numbers, along with taking a look at how things managed to close in Chicago. That with Mike Zuzla, GlobalComResearch.com. Out of Atchison, Kansas, we'll hear about feral hogs and black-headed vultures in southern Illinois from Teresa Steckler at University of Illinois Extension. And as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast, too. That with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agrible, all on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's start by going through the numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture as they were released at 11 a.m. Central Time this morning. For corn, production for grain is forecast now at 15 billion bushels. That's up 2% from the previous forecast and 6% better than last year. Based on conditions as of September the 1st, USDA expects the yield to average 176.3 bushels to the acre for corn, up 1.7 bushels from the previous forecast and 4.3 better than last year. Acreage updates were made in several states, says USDA, based on a thorough review of all the available data. Total planted acres at 93.3 million acres, up about 1% or around 600,000 acres. Area harvested for grain also up that same amount. And for soybeans, production was at 4.37 billion bushels this time around for the month of September, the crop production report. That forecast is 6% better than 2020. And based on the September 1 conditions, yields are expected to be 50.6 bushels to the acre. That's up 0.6 bushels from the previous forecast and up 0.4 bushels from last year. Total planted area there at 87.2 million acres is down less than 1 percentage point from the previous estimate. One other note, the average season's cash price for the crops now at $5.45 for corn, and it's down 80 cents from the previous estimate for soybeans at $12.90 a bushel. In Chicago, December corn reacted by moving 7.5 cents higher by the end of the day at $5.17.5. The March at 5.26.5 up 7.25, and May up 6.75 at 5.31.5. Soybeans finished higher as well, up 16 in the lead November, 12.86.5. January 12.94.75, up 16 for the day, and the March contract there at 12.99.25, up 15.25. Wheat futures at 688.5, down 3.75 cents on this Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzlo at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to discuss the post-report marketplace. Thank you, Mike, for being here. First, your quick assessment of the numbers we've reported from USDA.
I think to me, Todd, this market turnaround after the report numbers really felt like a real bona fide relief rally. Like you could almost hear, I think this is how I felt anyway in the office. And I think Chicago probably felt the same way, as like it could have been a lot worse. So I think that's the way I would frame this report, because it wasn't a friendly report for corn or soybeans. There were aspects that were price friendly, but there are other aspects that were price negative. And I went into the report really thinking a lot about where do we stand on U.S. stocks to use ratios versus last month and in July, and where do we stand in world stocks to use ratios for those last two reports, because we had a figuring and a hankering and an idea that we were probably going to see bigger U.S. supplies come through in terms of either acreage yield or lower demand or all three. And how was that going to either upset the apple cart on a global scale, or would we have enough reductions in other countries that we would still sit very, very well when it came to stocks to use ratios and not be nearly as big as we could have been? And pretty much summing it up, that's where I stand at this point.
And what did they show?
Yeah, good question, because really big difference. U.S. stocks to use ratios, and it's important for the hedgers and the investors to really look at the price action today and see what wasn't running higher, especially given the report And so it really makes you wonder whether the report is going to have that long of a lasting impact on the price action, or the report reaction, I should say. But U.S. wheat stocks to use ratios came in lower for a third month in a row. And that takes us down below, in the United States, a 30% stocks to use ratio after today's numbers. That's the lowest since 2007. And so we are literally running the tightest that we've run in 13 or 14 years in wheat. And yet the wheat was not able to find any good support off of this market. You could see before the report, it wasn't being bought as the long side of spreads, because it was leading us lower before the report came out pretty much all of this week. I think this is a red flag, in other words, and I think it goes back to wheat doesn't have any harvest pressure to worry about. It doesn't have South American competition to fight. And it goes back to what the U.S. dollar's been doing and how that's been reacting to the investor class. And the U.S. dollar's heading back towards its last week's high as we speak right now. And if we close above that last week's high, that really puts you in a tough spot, because you've got some technical buy signals at that point. So wheat, as my leader, did not perform today like I wanted it to. As far as other important stocks to use numbers, soybeans, the exact opposite on a global scale. Nice numbers when it came to reduced acres, nice numbers when it came to staying strong in demand and exports, but our stocks to use ratios globally in soybeans rose for a third month in a row, exactly opposite the wheat at 26.1%. I really am nervous about the wheat, the soybean market going higher and having a lasting move up as harvest starts if the wheat can't come in underneath us. So I may be pushing hedges a lot more aggressively a week from today in soybeans.
And for corn?
Corn was kind of in middle of the road. I didn't expect the acreage increase in corn combined with an acreage decrease in soybeans. I was thinking both would come up some. And so that I'm going to be really watching. I wasn't surprised that USDA raised their corn yield, even though I have not raised mine and probably won't for at least another 2 months because of the late August and early September weather that we've been having. But I think the stocks to use ratios in corn in the United States at 9.5% is still below where we were in July at 9.6%. The global stocks to use ratios in corn at 25% today is compares to 24.6 back in July. I didn't really like USDA increasing Argentina more than they reduced the Brazilian crop. I think there's still quite a few, maybe 4, maybe 5 million tons of Brazil production that they need to trim on that number. So I think stocks to use are probably closer to where we were last month at around 24%. That's going to be the thing I watch as well.
You mentioned that you were going to stay put because of the August-September weather forecast. Do you disagree more with USDA raising the numbers for the Western Corn Belt states or keeping the numbers the same for the Eastern Corn Belt states?
Yeah, you know, that's it's an excellent question to ask, because it really does boil down to me to see that we've got Ohio, Indiana. Now, after this week's today's report, I should say, Ohio still kept a record yield, even though we went down. Indiana came into a 197 yield number. Illinois unchanged at 214. Kentucky went up 1.1 to 185. So we've got four major states. Granted, the weather has been good and in some areas near perfect, but I'm already getting some anecdotal yield reports from West Central Illinois that there are some issues with water and wet spots and tar issues in the corn that's really pulling the yield down in some of the very early going fields. So I really question these record yields in these four states, all of them at one time.
What are you watching in the outside markets this week?
I think the biggest thing is the trend in the dollar, because the PPI number came in today at 8.3%. That's the year-over-year number that we've never seen before since the government's been keeping track of year-over-year numbers going back to 2010. It doesn't mean a lot because it's not a very long time, but it still says that we've got a lot of inflation. The supply chain and the hurricane are going to keep us with a lot of inflation. the Fed jobs report, you know, and what the Fed said in Jackson Hole and the jobs report we talked about last week. I just don't think the Fed really wants to jump into tapering right now, but I could be wrong. And if that's the case, the dollar will keep going higher and that puts more pressure on the markets. I guess bottom lining it out, everything macro and micro, I think if we can't see the wheat turn around here, I wouldn't be surprised to see the market go down again into the end of the month and then try and carve out a low around the September stocks report.
Finally, USDA raised corn exports 75 million bushels. You good with that?
Yeah, that's fine. As long as we don't see a real big change in the Gulf of Mexico. In other words, Ida has done an immense amount of damage. We're not out of the woods there, and the tropics are getting more active. And so I think that's still an issue the month of September may have to contend with.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend, buddy.
You too. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. If you can stay with us for the whole hour, you'll hear our Commodity Week program with our panelist Aaron Curtis from Midco, Joe Vaklevic from Standard Grain, and Matt Bennett at agmarket.net. If not, you can always find it online right now at willag.org, willag.org. Or hear it on many of these radio stations over the weekend. Well, now for something completely different, let's talk about Southern Illinois. That's not the different part. The different part is some of the problems that they've been having in that part of the state. They're related to animal agriculture. One of them is feral hogs, and the other one is, well, turkey vultures, and Teresa Steckler is here to talk about that. Hi, Teresa. Thank you for being here. You're a beef specialist for the state and located in Southern Illinois. You do a lot of work there. Let's start off with the vultures, and actually not turkey vultures, if I remember right. What's the name?
Black-headed. The actual problem are the black-headed vultures. They're the ones that have been slowly migrating north. They typically had been migrating south, hence they're covered by the Migratory Fowl Act, which means that you cannot cull the animals if they're predating on any of your livestock. So we're trying to get the word out and try to be proactive and help farmers who are having issues come up with deterrents. And if the deterrents won't work, we go to Plan B. And then after Plan B, then we go to Plan C. And ultimately, we get a hold of the APHIS office in the Springfield and help with permitting to hopefully just take a few of those birds out and be a deterrent for them to come back for a period of time.
So you said that they're a predator, but it would seem for agriculture that, you know, this is a bird. It's not that big, surely.
Well, they're not really classified as a predator, but they have predatory behavior from what I've seen. I would classify them as a predator. They will act like a pack of wolves. You'll have a cow that just calved. She's tired. She's trying to protect that calf. And what they'll do is they'll have a group on one side of the calf attack the calf, and then she'll go run over to shoo those birds off, and then the birds from the opposite side will come in, and they will just absolutely wear that cow out. So what we try to do is tell guys, clean their fields of any dead trees so there's no roosts. Clean up all the placentas that you can to help minimize their, you know, minimize attracting, because they're a visual. They don't smell, if I have the species correct. And also, if you can, try to, you know, keep an eye on, bring up those cows that are pretty close to calving, which I realize in Southern Illinois is a very hard thing to do. But keep an eye on your calving and try to minimize any dead carcasses around your farm within 2 or 3 miles, even deer, you know, dead deer carcasses, anything like that. Get them away from there. Try to bury them or something so that there's not any attractants.
The other issue is feral hogs. This has to do, I think, in part with tourism, which agricultural tourism is a big deal.
Yes, in Southern Illinois, ag tourism is big, and we have had some feral hogs in Southern Illinois. Fortunately, to the best of my knowledge, those have been removed, but we do not want those. Anybody that's lived in the South and had to deal from an agricultural perspective, the wild hogs, they bring in disease. They will completely obliterate a pasture. They love to go through and eat corn. Watermelon is another thing that they absolutely love. So any kind of watermelon field, any other melon fields, they will go through a huge field and just ravage it and make it useless for human consumption after that.
And generally, these are not just one animal. They run in packs.
Yeah, they run in, I believe it's called a sounder. And you'll have generally that big lead sow, and then a lot of her female piglets will be with her. And then the scary thing is that you can have one sow. She can have a litter in the springtime, and 2 to 3, up to 4 months, depending on nutrition, those female piglets can be already of reproducing age. So it does not take very long for the wild hog population to explode.
What's the issue that we need to deal with? Is it just finding them and eliminating them, making sure that they don't come back into the state? What are you worried about most?
What I'm worried about most is people inadvertently bringing wild hogs in from the south and bringing sound breeding stock in, and the population exploding. So we are really asking people down in southern Illinois that either contact me, contact their DNR officer, or contact even their local police force, because we want to eradicate them. We do not want them. It would be a travesty to get a huge population going in the state.
Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you very much, Todd, for the opportunity.
Teresa Stackler is a beef specialist in the state of Illinois for University of Illinois Extension.
Let's now turn our attention to the weather forecast. Eric Snodgrass is here for a Friday afternoon with AgriBowl and Nutrient Ag Solutions. Hi, Eric. It's another beautiful day in Illinois. Can you tell me about the weather and whether it'll be this good for a while or not?
Yeah, we've got some decent weather on tap here for a while. So we're going to be seeing temperatures slowly warm up, but a lot of clear days in a row here through our weekend, with our next chance of rain probably for most of Illinois coming through like next Tuesday. Good chance of storms at that point. But overall, we're going to see temperatures kind of really rebound. So get out and enjoy the rest of the day on Friday, because we're going to start to see those temperatures really come up here as the weekend progresses, back into possibly the low 90s. So there we go, back to summer type temperatures.
And what else?
Well, you know, as we think about the bigger picture of things, I think it's smart to talk about what's going on in the tropics. So when you head down toward Texas, I'm going to be watching all weekend just to the south of Texas into the Gulf and the Bay of Campeche, because there's a very high probability event occurring there that could become a pretty potent tropical system that could push anywhere between 6 to 15 inches of rain into Texas and Louisiana. You know, that's a place that just got hammered, especially Louisiana, with Hurricane Ida. And then we got to take a trip around the world, and this will be the bigger picture thing for week two, and that is there's a super typhoon that's currently sitting just to the south of Taiwan, and it's expected to go over Taiwan and toward Japan and eventually get pulled north into the Pacific jet stream. And why we care about those this time of year is because those events can often kind of elongate and stretch out and deepen, you know, the trough features that run across North America. And just remember, we're heading toward a solstice, right? Or excuse me, an equinox. And therefore, we're going to be talking a lot more about when those first frost dates are going to be here. So all of that's getting wrapped up together. A lot of activity in the tropics that's impacting weather in the extratropics.
Well, what does it mean, say, for the next 10 days here?
Sure. So our next 10 days here, we're going to overall favor warmer conditions, but we're going to be seeing fronts come through like one every 4 or 5 days. That's the typical for this time of year, is to see fronts passing through about that frequency. Now, in addition to that, we're going to watch the jet stream pattern really make a break away from what it had been and start to dive a pretty substantially deep trough into the Pacific Northwest, which means the precip's going to come back there first. But overall, if all the colder weather is on the West Coast, we tend to resist any sort of, you know, sustained colder weather here, which would indicate any sort of early frost here. So remember, you know, in central Illinois, we have had frost events in central Illinois at the end of the third and fourth week of September historically. I'm not looking for any of that this year, but that's how things are shaping up overall. Put it all together with precip, generally speaking, we're going to hit right about our averages on precip through the next 2 weeks.
And then, you know, September, especially because USDA put the acreage numbers in today's reports and the grain stocks are coming up, kind of sets the tone in the markets for the rest of the year. I'm wondering whether we have a tone for the harvest and the winter season.
Yeah, sure. So we got some new data. It's the beginning of the month. And so we all of our long range global models updated, and they're all painting a similar picture from about now through mid-October. And that is possibly drier along the East Coast with near normal to slightly wetter than average conditions in the Midwest. Now, that's not exactly what we want to hear. We'd like to hear that it's going to be, you know, drier as we approach mid-October, but the latest forecast suggests that we could see near normal to above normal precip. This is nothing like we saw, for example, in like harvest of 2018, where we were tucked in between two big high pressure cells and it just didn't stop raining during that harvest time period. But overall, a more mild temperature pattern is forecast. But just remember, this is, you know, this is fall, right? So expect fronts, expect temperature swings to be relatively, you know, frequent and just your normal type of fall pattern. But you said winter, so I might as well talk about it. We got new data for it. If I could make this winter happen the way the models are forecasting it, I would do that because it suggests we could see above normal precip. That's good for soil moisture this winter going into the next season. And it also suggests that we could see near normal temperatures, which we would prefer those good hard freezes in winter. While they're terrible for our roads, they're fantastic for the soil quality and soil health, and also pest control as well. So I like what I'm seeing with this La Nina that's developing in our winter forecast around here.
Yes, and you like snow, so great, thanks.
I still have two snowblowers, so I'm set.
Hey, it is, we're coming into fall here, but they're coming into spring in South America. Can you give me your assessment there?
Yeah, so latest updates starting, you know, September 15th is when they can plant. If you go September 15 to October 15, some of the newest updates suggest that South America will likely not be seeing major delays in their planting progress this year if the model forecast holds true and they get the moisture returning on the monsoon as expected. Plus, it recently rained in southern Brazil, and that's where the greatest drought extent has been. But you know what? Why not look out longer term for them as well toward their midsummer, which would be, of course, our midwinter. Because of the developing La Nina, there is a lot of model evidence. It's actually in every global model that's run right now, suggesting that the southern half of Brazil, from Mato Grosso do Sul through Paraná and Rio Grande do Sul and into Argentina, could be the region to be watching for growing season drought development. So that's pretty characteristic of La Nina that we've got developing. And I think there's going to be a long weather story coming out of South America this year that's certainly going to impact our markets.
Oh, soybeans in South America, a crop every 6 months on the planet. That means there's a weather rally in the making at some point. Thank you. We'll have you keep us up to date on that. We appreciate it. You have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too. Thanks.
Thank you. That's Eric Snodgrass. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions. Joined us on the Closing Market Report. Commodity Week is up next with our panelists, including Matt Bennett, Aaron Curtis, and Joe Vaklevic. We'll be right back in a moment here on Illinois Public Media.